Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Culp, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning. It is Thursday, April 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Your shoes are untied.
I don't have any laces, so I know what you're doing.
Okay.
April Fools.
Yeah.
Be careful,
everybody.
I'm so sad that I couldn't come up with anything clever this morning.
I know.
You had to remind me.
I reminded you. So you're welcome. For the rest of the day, you'll be on guard.
Yeah.
So you're welcome for that.
Yeah.
Welcome, audience. Great to have you with us as well, everybody. This is our COVID-19 Community Information Program from KSJE, and we have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking a lot about vaccines. Our local doctors are going to be back with us to give us an update on declining hospitalizations, which is awesome.
Right.
Excellent news.
And long hauler treatment.
And the treatment for the long haul COVID patients.
All
because
sorts of things.
We've got folks who've maybe gotten COVID and recovered mostly, yet they're still dealing with some of these longer term effects. And that's where some of the science is moving towards to how do we treat that.
Correct.
In the future.
Then, and variants.
And the variants,
of course.
They also
talk about variants. So anyway.
Exactly. We're also going to talk about seniors, senior citizens. We have the New Mexico Cabinet Secretary joining us, who's in charge of the Department of Aging and Long-Term Services. And also, we're going to be hearing from one of the local directors of one of the local senior centers here in San Juan County. So that's what we're covering
big
today.
Show.
How about that, right? Definitely a big show. This is week number, oh my goodness, is it really 55? Yeah.
Yep.
It is 55. There it is. It's confirmed.
It's confirmed.
And there you go. Week 55, everybody.
And we've stuck with the viewers and listeners for over a year.
I think.
And they've stuck with us.
I was going to say, the correct phrase is they have stuck with us, which we appreciate.
Which we appreciate.
But we feel that this is an important public service and continued even after 55 weeks, that there is still new information to share about COVID-19. There's definitely evolving information about the vaccine, the treatments, and what's going on with these variants and things.
Yes.
So that's why we're still here.
Yes.
Every Thursday. So we appreciate everybody staying with us. And so the big news this week has to be, of course, that the state of New Mexico has now moved and announced that they are moving into phase two on Monday, which was, you know, if you look at this graphic I've put on the screen, they were planning to do that by summer. You know, April 6th is not necessarily summer.
No,
which is a good thing.
Beginning of spring.
I'm
highly impressed. Is this like a under promise over deliver, or are they shocked too? That's my question.
I bet it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I would think it's probably about the availability of vaccines. You know, because
yes.
You can't give them if you don't have them, and so they are anticipating a good supply, and the fact that they've gotten through phases 1A, B, and C so quickly. Also, now they're still going to be working and prioritizing people in those other phases, right? 1A, 1B, and 1C, but opening it up to people in phase two beginning on Monday, April 5th. And so that's all New Mexicans 16 plus eligible for the vaccine. And so that's the latest from the Department of Health. And, you know, again, I think that's what we keep hearing is the key to getting things reopened and to keeping the case numbers down, the hospitalizations down. I think our audience will hear maybe, and I heard it in our doctors, they seem more relaxed maybe in this interview because they're not dealing with a full hospital of sick people on COVID floors any as much as they were before.
Yeah, I think there's some relief.
Did you hear that in their voices?
I think there's some relief. Well, I couldn't tell if it was that or the fact that we gave them free T-shirts for Doctor's Day.
Well, that may help.
Could have been either.
Maybe that was it, but hopefully it's also that the cases are down. But we're happy about that. So we want to pass along, too, that there is a vaccine clinic, a no appointment and no registration clinic. They had one yesterday, and they're having another one next week on April 7th. That's Wednesday, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the San Juan County Public Health Office in Farmington, which is located at 355 South Miller. So again, the other way to get the vaccine is to register online, but this one There's no registration required. I imagine there's going to be a line of folks, right. And you know, it's kind of first come, first serve while supplies last. But that is what's happening. The first one of these that we've seen. There have been some others in Aztec and the Bloomfield and Blanco areas from the drugstores, but this is the first Department of Health vaccine clinic that we've seen.
Yes.
So that's coming up next week, everyone. And I think the one yesterday went fairly smoothly.
Yes.
We haven't heard anything different. Reminder to register online, of course, vaccinenm.org, and that's where you can go to get registered. And, of course, now that 16 plus, the state will be contacting folks to set up appointments.
Yes.
And things along that line. And then the support number, 855-600-3453. So without any further ado, should we hear from our doctors today?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go, everybody. Joining us this morning, once again, to talk a little bit about the COVID situation in New Mexico, and specifically Farmington, San Juan County, and San Juan Regional Medical Center. Friends of the show.
Friends of the show.
And they're back, and we couldn't be happier, right? Dr. Aaron Philpott and Dr. Brad Greenberg from San Juan Regional Medical Center. Welcome both of you on the phone this morning. It's great to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Very welcome. I guess let's start with both of you and Dr. Greenberg. Maybe you can start for me about talking about the hospitalizations. We have heard, and I think this is true, obviously, that hospitalizations are down at San Juan Regional and around our state. Numbers seem to be still down. San Juan County is at turquoise, which we're all thrilled about. And so, A, is that still true? And then, B, the focus now turns to some of these long-haul COVID patients, and how are they doing, and what's the thinking about treating them?
Well, that's a great question, and, you know, it's something that we actually are very happy to see is a decrease in overall case counts at our facility. So we've actually, you know, we were looking at some of the older data, and we really had peaked somewhere just a little bit higher than 100 patients, 100 COVID patients in the facility. Several months ago, and today it looks like we have a combination of both PUIs and COVID positive patients of only 20, which is very reassuring. So we're definitely trying to reposition all the resources within the hospital to do two real important things. One is to address an increase in non-COVID volumes. And the other is really to make sure that we maintain a safe environment of care and we remain poised to cope with any of the unforeseen circumstances that could happen in the near future. Even though, as we're very happy to see our case counts decrease, we're cognizant of what's happening around the world, in Europe, and also around the country with increasing case counts and increasing hospitalizations in some regions of the country. So far, New Mexico seems to continue to trend downward, the emphasis has really been on vaccination and trying to reopen things. But in other places in the country, especially the upper Midwest and Michigan in particular, as well as New York and New Jersey, I've seen much increased cases, which makes everyone real concerned. So we're trying to enjoy the decrease in the case counts, take a big deep breath, prepare for non-COVID volumes, and remain prepared for what may come.
Good to know. And in these long-haul patients, because we know we've had thousands of patients in our state, in our county, that have contracted COVID and somewhat recovered from, but some still have some serious health conditions, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right, Scott. We are definitely shifting our efforts as we are freeing up a little bit more time as we've gotten through this very large last surge to focus on what we can do to support these patients who are experiencing these long-haul symptoms or these long COVID symptoms. And just to remind us kind of how we're defining these different stages, acute COVID is up to 4 weeks, symptoms up to 4 weeks. And then there's this sort of in-between phase of ongoing symptomatic COVID, which lasts up to a total of 12 weeks. And then after 12 weeks is sort of the formal definition that's emerging of post-COVID or long COVID or long-haul COVID. Many different names have been emerging across the world to describe sort of these different clinical symptoms. And it should be noted the stages are reflective of the symptoms, but not related to actual viral infection or infectivity or transmissibility. There's been lots of interesting studies that have been done looking at these different symptoms, which most commonly include fatigue, weakness, really poor endurance, just not feeling like you can get through your day. Of course, the shortness of breath, chronic cough, chest pain or discomfort, and then some interesting neurologic and psychological symptoms, including the altered taste and smell, and then anxiety, depression, PTSD, and even in some severe cases, psychosis. Some risk factors include, these can happen, people who never require hospitalization. But more commonly, we're finding these longer symptom courses are among people who were hospitalized, and especially in the intensive care unit. Older age also predisposes you to long COVID. And then any other pre-existing medical conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure. And another risk factor is those who have had other complications of COVID, like, for example, a bacterial pneumonia on top of their coronavirus or a blood clot. So there's lots of different symptoms, which I think is important to understand when we talk about the treatment. There was an interesting story recently in the New York Times about a gentleman, an ex-Marine, who had developed a florid psychosis after his COVID illness and actually required inpatient hospitalization. So the treatment for that is obviously very dramatically different than someone who has sort of exertional chest discomfort or a shortness of breath. We've talked much about these different symptoms among our team here and how we can best support our community, as you mentioned, given our substantial number of post-COVID patients now. We've talked with UNM. They have a physician champion there that's sort of coordinating care among specialists for patients who are having different long-term severe symptoms. And ultimately, the best course is, number one, the treatment is supportive. So that just means we don't have, a magic pill like penicillin for strep throat, but it's rather to support the symptoms like the psychosis, to treat with our known treatments, or to treat it with what we already have in our toolbox, like antipsychotics. And then I was actually should have said the first most important thing is long COVID, symptoms of long COVID are a diagnosis of exclusion. We've seen a lot of sort of collateral damage from the pandemic in our healthcare system and infrastructure, meaning that we had to rapidly shift from inpatient clinic visits to telemedicine visits or even phone visits who didn't have the technology. So we didn't have a lot of prep or planning time to sort of anticipate the impact of some of these things. And we're finding that people, like, for example, someone with shortness of breath, we need to make sure it wasn't just that they missed their heart failure medicines over the last 3 months, or someone with fatigue doesn't now have new undiagnosed, uncontrolled diabetes, and so on and so forth. And these things are commonly identified at in-person clinic visits, or even at visits that you come to get, your respiratory illness address, of which we haven't seen much of this year, so seen a further reduction of visits. So in sum, that's a lot to take in, but I think the most important piece is first rule out other causes of these symptoms that you suspect are long COVID, and second, supportive therapy remains the mainstay of therapy. And one final point, there's been some recent suggestion, and we've been hearing stories about the administration of the COVID vaccine possibly improving some of these long COVID symptoms. To my knowledge, there have been no formal studies to date. However, it is actively being looked at. And there's a couple emerging theories coming out of that, one of which is the vaccine, the immune system's response to the vaccine is boosting the immune system and allowing sort of this clearance of the virus that may have been just kind of a low level in some organs causing some of these long COVID symptoms. And then the second theory, and these are by no means proven, just very theoretical at this point, is that long COVID is a type of autoimmune disease, which means just that your own body is kind of attacking you and causing some of these symptoms. And the administration of the vaccine may help it kind of reset in some way and reduce this autoimmunity.
Very good. Thanks for nerding out and providing such a thorough answer. You know how I especially love that. So
I think you were nerding out.
Yeah, I was like scribbling notes over
yes.
here. Yes. Anyway.
The doctors were sharing important information for our audiences.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very clear. Very good. So let's talk about the variants. The UK variant has now shown up in all 50 states. Our sister local news program, Farmington Daily Times, reported this morning that one case was found in the Navajo Nation, and that individual was hospitalized. So can you give us an update on all the various variants showing up? We'll start with you, Dr. Greenberg.
Absolutely. So the UK variant, so the B117 variant, is thought to have started in the United Kingdom. There is a concerning features with this are that, really, from an epidemiologic standpoint, we're very concerned that it may be more transmissible than other forms of COVID that we've been used to for some time. In addition, some of the research is also demonstrated that the cases may be more severe and there may be a higher mortality associated with it. The good news is that the existing vaccinations that we have on the market available to us, Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, all seem to demonstrate adequate protective effects as it relates to the UK variant. So that's reassuring. The problem is that we're starting to see increasing numbers of cases and an increasing proportion of new cases in those areas that are demonstrating much higher incidence of new COVID cases now. So the numbers in Michigan, there's a large proportion of those that are related to B117, and the numbers in New York also seem to be related to B117. There have been sporadic cases, as you mentioned, Megan, around the country of B117. It's concerning. And in Europe, when that proportion of new cases approached approximately 50% of the new variant, it really looked like a tipping point where there was a much larger surge that followed. So we're following the epidemiology associated with this particular variant very closely and trying to really encourage folks to stick to COVID safe practices and go and get that vaccine. I think that's super important. The other variants that we have seen, the South African and the Brazilian variants, there's ongoing surveillance within the state of New Mexico and across the country, and there have been sporadic cases of both, around within the United States. Now, my understanding is that the South African variant may have be a slightly diminished effect of the existing vaccines, but not to say that they're rendered not useful, but they may be slightly diminished effect. And then I'm not sure, perhaps Dr. Philpott has seen any specific vaccine-related information as it relates to the Brazil variant. I know that now, though, the variant discussions have focused largely on the UK variant because it looks like that's really the problems we have at hand. But I do think that one thing that I want to make sure that everyone understands is that the best way to prevent variants and to not get sick is to do the things that you've been doing for the last year. Wash your hands, wear a mask, cover your cough, appropriately socially distance. And now the most important thing here is go out and get that vaccine when it's available to you.
Thank you. Very good. Dr. Philpott?
Yes, I think Dr. Greenberg pretty well covered it. I would just add, I echo the sentiment and the imperative that the vaccine is the most important way to reduce further development of variants, as this is just the natural evolution of viruses, and reduced cases equals reduced opportunity for the virus to find its niche in a new way. The P1, which I think the general consensus is not to associate the variants with the countries, because we're not even sure, if that's exactly where they grew or developed, and it can just, I guess, create issues. But anyway, the P1 variant, I know there is some concern that the vaccines won't be as effective against it, based on some of the data down in Amazonas, where a large proportion of the population was first infected, and many are now getting reinfected with this P1 variant. So there's some concern that, the mRNA vaccines developed kind of based on the first viral sequence may not be effective or may be significantly less effective against it. But yep, just social distancing, vaccination, and let's reduce the spread.
There you go. And doctors, let me ask you both then, it seems like we're kind of in a race against time, though, with getting the vaccines rolled out to as many folks as we can, and then hearing about the spread of these variants and things along that line to really try to get these cases back down to where we want them, and even to go away entirely, which certainly we all are anxiously awaiting for. Dr. Greenberg, is that kind of how you see it too, is kind of this race against time with these variants and these increasing case numbers and the vaccine rollouts in the States and the world?
That's absolutely how I see it, Scott. I think that, as Dr. Philpott mentioned, it's the natural course of things for viruses to change over time and to mutate. And if and when provided the opportunity to reproduce within a particular host, they change over time. They make errors. And so the best way to prevent the creation of new ones or create the spread of existing variants is to do, like I mentioned, all the things that we've already been doing. So the vaccination is a pressing thing. I think that we should all get out there, and when it's available to us, and how great and what a great time it is that today they released the phase 2 for those folks that are 16 and older to get appropriate vaccines, within the state of New Mexico. It's just such an important and timely thing for folks to go do, get that vaccine. Stay conscientious, continue to wash your hands, continue to wear a mask where appropriate, continue to socially distance where appropriate, and that way we can sort of continue to maintain the progress that we've made and try to avoid a recurrence of what's happened in the last several months.
Very good. And sort of drafting on the race to vaccinate, there's been a lot of controversy around AstraZeneca, which is not currently being used in the United States. Dr. Philpott, maybe you can give us an update on that and explain that for us a bit.
Sure, yeah. So the AstraZeneca vaccine has been associated or has been put on hold in several countries due to a concern with this association with a rare occurrence of blood clots in some younger adults. And I think, correlation is not causation, and it's really important to highlight that in this situation. We can assess the risk of acquiring COVID and the complications thereof, including possible death for some of these high-risk people versus this potential lower risk of blood clots. And I think the answer is evident there. But what I will say is, with the vaccine rollout, it is essential that scientists, these vaccine companies, doctors, everyone who is part of this system acts very conservatively. So when we see, for example, the AstraZeneca situation, I think it is prudent and important for the public to see that this is being widely looked at and addressed, because as we just talked about, we cannot have vaccine hesitancy. It is essential that the public trusts our vaccines and is willing to get them. So I think the sort of process and investigation into this possible side effect of the AstraZeneca vaccine, or possible complication rather, is well performed and important to do.
Very good. And Dr. Greenberg, would you like to add anything to that?
I think that the scientific process for approving vaccinations is a intentionally very conservative approach. And I echo what Dr. Philpott was saying. I think that it's so important that, you know, as things pop up, and remember this happened with the ideas of anaphylaxis and whether or not, you know, the risks of anaphylaxis for with the vaccine are, or the anaphylaxis is a severe allergic reaction, is something that we need to be concerned with. And it looks like, you know, we try to balance those risks as we move forward. And all these vaccines are somewhat new, but I actually think that the idea that the AstraZeneca vaccine, even though it's not used in the United States, is used broadly in many countries around the world, and it's been given to many, many folks. And when we have case reports of these particular kinds of complications, we try to figure out, is this the normal rate within the population, or is this is there an association, like a not a causation, but an association with the vaccination that was provided? And I think that the idea that we're able to analyze this rapidly and try to make really good choices about what we're going to do, I think is pretty amazing from a scientific perspective. But I think that one other thing that everyone's also looking for, which is another development from the last 24 hours, is the extension of the vaccinations to younger populations. I think that this is something that is a very similar approach. It's a very conservative approach for the extension of, this was an article, which it was the extension of the Pfizer vaccine to the 12 to 15-year-old age group. And they're working through the process now, and it's a methodical and some folks are going to think that it's too fast, and other folks are going to think it's too slow. But I think that the key here is they're trying to take a methodical and science-based approach towards making sure that the vaccine is safe and effective in those age groups. And I think that when we look at safety and we look at expansion of either new vaccines or expansion of existing vaccines, I think that the scientific process and the rigor with which it's conducted is, I think folks should be confident that the vaccines that are on the market within the United States are going to be safe and effective.
Very good. Well, Doctors Aaron Philpott and Brad Greenberg, thank you so much again for joining us. It's been a while. We missed our friends of the show, so thanks for coming on this morning.
Thanks so much, Megan and Scott. We appreciate it.
We appreciate both of you, and happy Doctors Day this week to both of you, and thank you for the work that you all are doing.
Thank you.
Take care. And there you go, our doctors, fans of the show, friends of the show.
We know they're friends. We hope that they're fans.
We hope they're fans. Well, they keep answering our calls and coming on the show, so I'm going to take that as a positive.
Yeah.
But we always appreciate all their information. Lots of good stuff.
Lots of good stuff.
Right? Good information. So getting back to other things we wanted to share with you, everybody, we did get the averages of the case numbers from the San Juan County Office of Emergency Management. And so here they are, again, from the last couple of weeks. This is the state of New Mexico in the red kind of magenta line. As you can see, cases are still trending downward. San Juan County is the blue line, which has almost disappeared there at the bottom. And it's hard to see on the screen. And the Navajo Nation is the green line, which, again, is very low to the bottom of the screen. So all those are heading in the right direction.
Yes,
so
yeah.
We're glad to see that. The other graph we like to share is this one, which shows COVID cases in San Juan County in yellow and the numbers of deaths on average in blue. And then that static red line is kind of that 80 case mark, which we want to be under in
right.
order for things to reopen, as we've been talking about, right, with the red, yellow, green, turquoise map that we talk about, of course. And so as you can see in San Juan County, we've seen a little bit of an uptick at the very bottom, and it went from 34 average cases a week or so ago to now 72, still under the 80, but moving in the wrong direction, at least on average. So we'll see where things are this next week as we put these numbers together.
Right.
And, of course, the map will be updated next Wednesday. We'll give you the latest on that. But, you know, we're hopeful that San Juan County will stay in turquoise, which has allowed things to reopen in a lot of cases, restaurants and things like that. I think the theaters are working on a plan to maybe reopen the movie theaters in turquoise counties in New Mexico. We had the Allens on not too long ago. We'll probably get an update from them if that is going to be happening. But anyway, that's what's going on there. Johns Hopkins.
So the United States confirmed COVID cases are now at 30,462,642. The United States confirmed deaths are now at 552,140.
There you go. And so, again, you can see the other countries there, Brazil, India, France. France going back into lockdown, I think, Friday, tomorrow.
Yes.
Across the country. The graph that we always kind of point out at the bottom, the lower right of the screen, as cases kind of went up there a little bit, and now they're kind of back down in the United States. So that's good, but we're seeing increases in Europe, which is the problem.
Right.
And some of these variants that we've talked about today,
right,
which are concerning. So that's one thing to be concerned about, everybody. So there you go. The other numbers here, again, from the state, 277 new cases yesterday. Of that, 12 of them were in San Juan County. There were five deaths in New Mexico yesterday. Two of those were in San Juan County. And then we had 30 additional recoveries across our state for a total of 173,701 recoveries. And across the Navajo Nation, we show you some of the other stories we're covering at ksje.com/news. They had 15 additional cases yesterday. No additional deaths, though, across the Navajo Nation. So their totals, again, are 30,095 cases and 1,247 deaths across the Navajo Nation. And then there you see the other story about the expanded COVID vaccine eligibility. So let's talk about seniors.
Yeah, let's shall
do
we? It.
With our next guest. Here we go. Joining us now to talk a bit more about the COVID-19 vaccination rollouts among seniors in New Mexico, we are pleased to have with us the New Mexico Cabinet Secretary for the New Mexico Department of Aging and Long-Term Care in our state. It is Katrina Hotram Lopez on the phone with us this morning. Secretary Hotram Lopez, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We appreciate it. And so let's talk a little bit about some of the efforts. It was just announced, I think, this week that now New Mexicans 75 years of age and over do not necessarily need appointments to get their COVID-19 vaccination. They really are trying to push this out quickly among the seniors, correct?
Well, so what it is, they no longer need to have the event codes to schedule their vaccine appointments, which means if they're registered, at their convenience, they'll get an announcement through either email or text, and they can, at their convenience, now schedule their own appointment when it's in their community. And that is really helpful to this population, especially those 75 and plus, because not all of them are have cell phones or are tech savvy and can respond in time in order to be in an event. And so this allows them to do it at their leisure when there are vaccines that are available in their area.
I see. And that's the significance of it, because that is part of that registration process, right, was that you would register and then the state would alert you and send you this event code that would allow you to make that appointment. But as you're saying now, for these folks 75 years of age and older, they no longer need that event code to get an appointment.
That's right. And so what would happen is they'd get an event code and then they'd rush to try to schedule an appointment. And by the time that they scheduled, it was all full. And so we were getting a lot of complaints about that. And one of the things that we'd also done is ramp up our resource center that is basically a call center. So it's called the ADRC, to also take live calls so that we could actually register folks and schedule them for appointments. But this is an added benefit with the Department of Health and Aging and Long-Term Services so that seniors can go ahead and get registered themselves at their own convenience.
Very cool. And of course, one of the major resources for this demographic are senior centers. Are you guys working in conjunction with senior centers?
Man, there is nothing that we cannot do without our aging network team, and that includes those senior centers. And so we have really partnered with them and the Department of Health in order to, we're calling our seniors that have been receiving any type of service with us, asking them if they want to be scheduled, if they have been scheduled, can we schedule those appointments? And not only that, but our senior centers have been so excited that they've actually held vaccine clinics. And the Department of Health has seen that value. And we, Aging and Long-Term Services, have up to 6,000 allocated and dedicated vaccines to us each week so that we can vaccinate our seniors and adults with disabilities.
That's terrific news. And of course, Secretary, we know that the state overall has done a really good job nationwide compared to other states of getting the vaccine rolled out and into the arms of our population. I think I just saw an infographic, if you will, on Facebook that says now, what, 55% of New Mexicans between 60 and 74 have gotten their at least their first dose?
That's right, and we're so excited about that. The acceptance rate in New Mexico is great, and we attribute that to the governor's office and their push for us to really communicate with all populations, including our seniors, on the benefits of vaccines and being vaccinated and being protected. Because what this really allows our seniors to do is take back control of their lives. This virus has really hit and affected our seniors really hard. And so being vaccinated for them means safety and freedom, and we're so excited about that.
Yeah, that's right. It is really liberating. And so, one last question before we let you go. What about folks who haven't been vaccinated yet? Maybe they have a relative that's a senior, or maybe they are a relative of a senior, and to your point, they would like to spend time with these folks they haven't seen in a year. What can they do? Where do they go?
So it's interesting. So family members who either want to help register, or because they haven't been vaccinated, or because their family member hasn't been vaccinated, they don't know how to do it, simply call our 1-800 number, 1-800-432-2080, and we will assist in getting you registered for vaccinations. Now, I think it's important to know that right now we're in a phase where it's 16 and older with an underlying health condition and, you know, 60 and plus that can be vaccinated. So the range is pretty large now. So people really need to register and sign up for those vaccinations so that we can continue to lead the country in shot and arms.
Very good. And Secretary, I think, too, it should be noted that the state has really done a pretty good job of ramping up these vaccine procedures and clinics in all corners of the state, even in some of the more rural areas. And that continues, right?
That not only continues, but we're expanding even more. So we announced on Tuesday our partnership with Presbyterian Hospital just in the Albuquerque metro area, but soon to expand to actually vaccinate homebound adults who have disabilities or are seniors. And so we're not only providing more vaccination clinics, but we're now figuring out how to do that in the homes. And so this is a great partnership, but we know that the Department of Health and Aging have also partnered with local EMS authorities to get individuals vaccinated in their home and their community. We've done over 1,000 so far across the state of New Mexico, and there'll be more to come.
Very exciting news. Well, Katrina Hotram-Lopez, thank you so much for joining us this morning and giving us this, really optimistic, hopeful, and validating update.
There you go. We appreciate it very much.
Yep.
Good information about our seniors. And more coming up about our seniors, because we have our next guest.
Great. Let's hear it.
How about that?
Let's do it.
Joining us on the phone this morning, Jessica Pilotti is here. She is the director of the Bloomfield Senior Center. Jessica, good morning, and thank you for coming on the program.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Megan.
Great to talk to you. Thank you very much. And so we just heard the state secretary from the Office of Aging and Long-Term Services about their efforts to get the vaccine out to seniors in our state. What can you tell us from the Bloomfield Senior Center's perspective?
We were able to have a vaccine clinic, a drive-through vaccine clinic at our center. The first shot, the Moderna, was given on February 10th to 100 seniors, and then they received their second shot on March 10th. And so we made it kind of fun. We really thank Craig Burgess at Pinion Family Pharmacy. He did a great job, and all the volunteers and my staff. We made it really fun. We were in costumes and we handed out homemade goodies, and it just went super smooth.
Very good. That's good to hear. And so with that vaccine event that happened, I mean, is that something unique for seniors? Do you need to do extra things to get them to come to get the vaccine? Or are you hearing a lot of maybe acceptance from seniors when getting the vaccine because they know it will lead them to maybe to get back into contact with their loved ones and grandkids and things like that?
Yes, it was kind of a little bit of a strenuous lead-in. We were working with the state, but we contacted all of our home deliver seniors, people who are medically homebound that we deliver to on a daily basis, deliver meals to, and we just asked them if they would like it. We had them fill out the consent form if they did want it, and we said, you know, we were not able to provide them transportation. I think there were only five out of all our senior home deliver senior population that did not choose to get it or did not come. Everybody else found a ride. They came through. And then we also put out the call to just other seniors in the area to come and get the shot. You know, we didn't really know what to expect. We knew that people who were coming to get the shot were very eager to get it. And family members that brought them were all smiles. And it was just a really great time. And I even had one of my people who was vaccinating, a volunteer, you know, every time she gave a shot, she just said, congratulations. And we thanked the public for doing their part for everybody else. And it was really encouraging.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So I have two questions. One is, I feel like we kind of just ran past the fact that you guys were in costumes, and I would like to know what type of costumes those were. And then after that, I want to hear about activities, because the Senior Center, you know, is a place where seniors come and hang out, and it's a valuable service. And I'm sure that for quite some time, we were unable to do that. And so has that been recurring now?
You know, we are still closed. All the senior centers throughout San Juan County, the doors are still shut. I do know that the Bonnie Dallas Senior Center in Farmington, I believe they just opened their annex fitness center, but just that part. And that has to, of course, have a monitor at all times, as any fitness center does in our area, especially with a vulnerable population. It's really hard. We've been closed now for over a year. I remember we closed on March 16th. So we've been closed over a year. And, you know, we do provide that home delivered meal. We never stopped doing that. We never stopped going to work. We've never stopped cooking. So we deliver those meals still weekly. And then, of course, we provide that drive-through meal at the lunchtime from 12 to 12:30. And every week my seniors say, do you know when you're going to open? Do you know? And I say, nope, you know, we're just waiting for the news to come down the pipe. It's really an interesting case. It's just really hard to determine, you know, the people that are getting vaccines, and all of my staff are vaccinated and I'm vaccinated, but there's still a lot of people out there who are skeptical, or they're not sure what because the rollout of the vaccine was so fast in order to in this pandemic as much as we can, you know, there's skepticism, and I understand that, or there's just people who are choosing not to get it, and I understand some of those arguments as well, but I know with the population I work with, it's really tough to determine when we'll open, because I don't want to spend all this time and energy and money and safety precautions to just fling open my doors to anybody to come in. It's just going to be a really interesting challenge, I think.
I hear you. Well, and that makes a lot of sense, too. I know Megan is looking at me like, we're not going to let this pass. Jessica, I'm sorry, but we want to know about the costumes.
I know. Let's talk about something fun. This is why I compliment my staff all the time, because they are superhuman. So Shawnee Bell, who's my assistant cook at the Bloomfield Senior Center, she's just very much the one who is bubbly and kind of remembers everyone's birthday and does all that kind of thing. So she just, all of a sudden, she walked in and she said, hey, well, why don't we make it fun? And it's going to be February 10th, so why don't we dress up like Valentine's Day? And so we, like, you know, got goofy sunglasses and the little heart headbands and tutus and just all this crazy stuff. and we gave it out to all of our volunteers to wear too. And even Craig from the pharmacy had on a headband with these little hearts bobbing all over the place. He was all excited about the costumes. So we dressed up in costumes and we made these really yummy apple cookies. We made about 200 cookies, and we just, people who are waiting in line, we went up and down the line, collected their consent forms, wrote their number with shoe polish on their window of their car, and handed them out something to eat while they waited. So it was really, really fun. Oh, and then of course, a month later, when they came back March 10th, it was St. Patrick's. And so we had all of our green and crazy, all that, and we handed out Irish cream brownies that we made. So sorry you missed out on that.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, geez, you didn't save us any of those? Man. Okay, so that's adorable. I loved every bit of that. And let's talk about the homebound seniors. I think you mentioned that briefly, but for those seniors who are homebound, is there a plan for getting vaccinations out to those folks?
You know, well, we contacted all of the ones that we deliver to regularly, like daily. And we just said, if you want to come and get this shot, we cannot provide the transportation, but please, like, you know, we put it out 2-3 weeks ahead of time, probably more. And they were able to line up rides with relatives, sons, daughters, kids, grandkids, whoever it was. And those, they came in through the drive-through. They were in the passenger seat, and then whoever brought them in was, of course, in the driver's seat. And, you know, our pharmacists or our volunteers just put it in the arms of whatever window they were sitting at. And so it is possible to do that. I mean, I think that we know we have homebound seniors that mainly just get out for doctor's appointments. Well, that's what the delivery criteria is sort of, they don't really leave home too much. But I mean, most of them do have a friend or a family member around who, when it's something that's important, they are going to show up for those people. Not that they don't show up for them at other times as well. But I do know that, of course, I don't know if you've talked with Ashley at Care Drug. They have been very active in, you know, doing the clinics, the drive-through clinics. And then I know that they had worked some with the Aztec Senior Center about actually going to homes and doing shots for people that were homebound.
Right. We have heard from her, and that's exactly right. And Jessica Pilati, just one last question for you. Maybe for folks who maybe declined the vaccine from the Bloomfield Senior Center the first time in February, is there going to be maybe a second chance if they've maybe changed their mind, had second thoughts about it, and now think, well, maybe I need to get this vaccine? Is there something they can do through the Senior Center or just through the state portal like we've been hearing about? What would you recommend?
Well, and one thing, this will be a very long answer, and I apologize ahead of time, but I'm not sure if we're doing another vaccine clinic. We're totally for it. We've got it down pat, no problem. Just do it around a holiday so we can dress up. But so the problem with a lot of the elderly population is that the portal is online. We had a lot of issues with people who did not understand how to do it via computer, or they got on the phone, but the little phone tree was a little bit hard to understand, or they had hearing issues. We all know what the issues are. I mean, anybody out there knows what the issues are with the elderly population and online access. So Ken Hare, one of our City of Bloomfield council people, he contacted me and he said, what do you think about us putting in our utility bill that if people are having problems signing up on the DOH site, that they can contact the Senior Center and just do it over the phone with you? And I said, absolutely. So they put that on the utility bill that went out to, you know, all the Bloomfield population and beyond. And we got a lot of calls of people who either needed to check on their status or needed to get signed up at the DOH site. And to tell you the truth, before Ken even came to me, we did it on at least half of our population. We just did it over the phone with our folks because we knew they couldn't access them. They couldn't access it themselves. And so that's a great way to go if you have that ability to help people like that. They just called us and we put them on speakerphone and we were at the computer and we just got them right into the site. And it was really smart for Ken to think about that. But it's just that forethought. It's just kind of knowing what you need to do and thinking it through and saying, well, we can do this. So we did it.
That's great. And you're still able to do that, Jessica Pilati?
Absolutely.
For folks who want to call the Senior Center?
Yep, they can call the senior center, and myself or my staff are able to do that for them.
Very good. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing for our seniors and for coming on today to share all this great information.
Oh, sure. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We definitely appreciate it. Jessica Pilotti, she is the director of the Bloomfield Senior Center with us this morning on KSJE. So there you go. Just a couple more things to pass along, everybody, before we go today. And we want to mention a couple of events coming up. Echo Food Bank, of course. More food box distributions coming up. These are later in the month of April, but we wanted to let you know about them. April 22nd, that's a Thursday in Ngezi. Happening starting at 8:30 with the lineup out there, the food box distribution in Ngezi. Also, then in Blanco Elementary School, there is an event happening next Thursday, April 8th, and again Thursday, April 22nd at 4 p.m. Blanco Elementary School, another free food box distribution from the Echo Food Bank. And then one more at Huerfano Chapter House for registered members only, Thursday, April 8th, next week. Beginning at 9 a.m., the Echo Food Bank free food box distribution at the Huerfano Chapter House. So just a couple of those that we wanted to pass along. They're happening next week. So I think that wraps up our big show today.
Yeah, that was a jam-packed show.
Wasn't it, though? Holy smokes. Lots of great information, lots of great people, and you, everybody. We appreciate you joining us, tuning in, whether it's on video or on radio or online. So thank you very much for doing that. Have a great week. We will be back here next Thursday at 9 a.m. online right here at KSJE. So stay well, everybody. We'll see you next week. Have a good week. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.